Welcome to the first podcast series hosted by the Department of National Defense and Canadian Armed Forces on the United Nations Security Council Resolution 1325, or UNSCR 1325. The Security Council originally adopted this resolution on women, peace, and security on the 31st of October in 2000. 20 years later, the Department of National Defense and Canadian Armed Forces is still upholding the values that this resolution initially laid out for all of its members. The resolution reaffirms the important role of women in the prevention and resolution of conflicts, peace negotiations, peace building, peacekeeping, humanitarian response, and in post-conflict reconstruction. It also stresses the importance of their equal participation and full involvement in all efforts for the maintenance and promotion of peace and security. UNSCR 1325 affirms that peace and security efforts are more sustainable when women are equal partners in the prevention of violent conflict and in the peace-building process. Today, we will have three champions from the Department of National Defense and Canadian Armed Forces speaking to us about how UNSCR 1325 really is fitting into how the Canadian Armed Forces operates today. Speaking with us today, we have Major General Craig Aitchison and Chief Warrant Officer Crystal Harris, who are the co-champions for gender and diversity for operations for the Canadian Armed Forces. We also have Brigadier General Lise Bourgon, who is the champion for women, peace, and security. This podcast will interchangeably use French and English. There will also be a transcript provided for those who do not understand French or English and would like to read along instead of listening. There will also be acronyms used throughout this podcast, such as GBA+, WPS, UNSCR 1325, D&D, CAF, etc. For these meanings, they will also be expanded in the transcript, but for now, GBA Plus means Gender-Based Analysis Plus, WPS means Women, Peace, and Security, UNSCR 1325 is the United Nations Security Council Resolution 1325, D&D is the Department of National Defense, and CAF is the Canadian Armed Forces. Please note that due to COVID-19, audio quality between hosts and participants may differ. Hello, my name is Hannah Rosen. I am an analyst with the Directorate for Gender Equality, Diversity, and Inclusion at the Department of National Defense, and I am here with my colleague, Nadia.
Hi, everyone. Nadia Blanchard. I was originally working with José Robidoux as the coordinating officer within DIGP with SJS, the Director for Integrity and Gender Integration for the Department of Defense.
Amazing. Thank you. So now I'll turn it over to our speakers today. We are lucky enough to have three of the champions here at National Defense speaking with us about the Women, Peace, and Security Agenda and UNSCR 1325 as we're coming up on the anniversary. So if I could, I will start with Brigadier General Lise Bourgon, if you do not mind introducing yourself.
Oui, bonjour. Mon nom, c'est le général Lise Bourgon. C'est moi qui est le champion pour les Forces armées canadiennes du côté Femmes, Paix et Sécurité.
Thank you so much. And then I will move over to Major General Aitchison.
Hi, my name is Major General Craig Aitchison. I'm the commander of the Canadian Defense Academy and the champion for gender and diversity for operations for the Canadian Armed Forces.
Amazing. And then finally, Chief Warrant Officer Crystal Harris.
Hi, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Crystal Harris. I am the Strategic Joint Staff Chief Warrant Officer and the Defense Co-Champion for Gender and Diversity in Operations.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And so, as we know, we're meeting here today virtually to talk about UNSCR 1325, the Women, Peace, and Security Agenda, and in general, kind of gender equality here at National Defense and the Canadian Armed Forces. So I'm going to start us off with our first question, and this is going to be sort of a fireside chat. So for those listening, it's going to be something that hopefully you can follow along with. We're not going to use too much jargon, so we'll try to avoid that so you can definitely understand what we're talking about. So I'll start off with our first question. What does UNSCR 1325 mean to you,
as a senior leader within National Defense and the Canadian Armed Forces? And does personal commitment to the resolution matter as much as organizational commitment?
So I think, both professionally and personally, that the UNSCR 1325, which underpins the values that the Canadian Armed Forces seeks to achieve, is incredibly important. And partly because the Canadian Armed Forces is an instrument of national power, and how the government extends those interests internationally and domestically needs to reflect the broader national values. And I think UNSCR 1325 and Canadian values in 2020 align very closely. And we see it in this present government. We see it in the way that the Canadian Armed Forces approaches operations, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about that as we go through this podcast process.
Mais pour moi, la résolution 1325, c'est vraiment la formalisation, puis aussi légitimiser le processus. I'm a big fan, and as a woman in the military, I've always believed in 1325, even before it came into existence. But this formal recognition of 1325 that ensued, of course, for Canada, our first national action plan in 2010, and the GBA Plus analysis tool that came following that, and also a CDS directive for the integration of 1325, where we saw the perspective of the integration of gender in operation. So it was just a way of documenting and giving us legitimacy and the process. And I think really in the last 20 years, although at the beginning, I think that we integrated this perspective because we had to, because the government with the National Action Plan told us to do it. But now we recognize the strength of 1325 and the perspective of gender in operation. And as I say, we drank the Kool-Aid. You know, there's a value into gender perspective and a success in operation. So that's what it means for me.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I love the phrase of drinking the Kool-Aid, because honestly, I think it's one of the strengths of our government and the Canadian Armed Forces and National Defense in general, is just the commitment to being openly committed to gender equality, to including women in the peace process. And I think it's just so great that we have these formal policies and programs in place to ensure this. And then on top of that, we're also just committed on a level where we're talking to like-minded nations and ensuring we have that open communication between countries. And we're also open to learning. I think there's a huge learning capacity that we still need to do, and like every organization, and things are changing so quickly in today's society and the way that we even perceive gender equality. And I think that it's really great that our national defense and Canadian Armed Forces are really committed to such broad goals, but also so pertinent to the time.
For me, Hannah, I genuinely think that from the NCM perspective, you know, as leaders, we need to be responsible and authentically advocate for what we believe in as a nation and as a military force. And as General Burgoyne mentioned, you know, this UNSCR 1325 kind of solidified everything for us and gave us a pathway. And you know, essentially, we actually need to believe in what we do. So from an organizational commitment, obviously, we've made that commitment. But from a personal perspective, we need to believe in what we're doing. And if we represent all of the ethics and morals and principles and values and that list of things that the military represents, then we genuinely need to believe in that as we progress and wherever we're serving in the world.
I think that, and it goes back to governmental interests, and you know, I don't think that the Canadian Armed Forces is motivated strictly by governmental interests, right? I think that the Canadian Armed Forces understands the power of diversity, and so embrace what 1325 represents. I think that our capstone professional ethos doctrine, duty with honor, which is in the process of being rewritten, already reflects that to an extent, but the rewrite that we'll produce over the next year or so will absolutely reflect the values that that resonate within the UNSCR specifically. But the value of diversity and what that brings to any organization, I think, is clearly understood by the Canadian Armed Forces. I don't know that the rank and file necessarily understand the value in diversity, but certainly the leadership do, and understand that as we look at how we would take the idea behind 1325 and actually implement it in everything we do, and GBA Plus is an absolute first step. The establishment of gender advisors and focal points is our first steps, but how we truly integrate the understanding of what 1325 represents through training and education, through inculcation, is really what remains as the challenge. And duty with honor is the first step in that respect, and how we then integrate that into education and training as Commander CDA is something that's fascinating to me, because that's one of the ways in which we change culture and for people to understand again what UNSCR 1325 represents and how it is that the Canadian Armed Forces move those ideas forward.
I completely agree. And I was about to say, which actually ties perfectly into what you said, I think with living kind of the beliefs of UNSCR 1325 and really understanding the importance of it, it really highlights the commitment that our leadership has and that whole effect of the like leading down and almost a trickle down effect into our lower ranks and forces is the definite element that our leadership is really embodying what it means to embrace diversity, to respect diversity, and to really ensure that diversity is represented at every level of policies, programs, and operations. And I think that you're so correct in that defense really does a brilliant job at pushing that forward. I will move on to our next question, and my colleague Nadia is actually going to take it away in French.
Okay, donc pour poursuivre avec la deuxième question, je vais la demander tout en français, mais soyez à l'aise de répondre en anglais, la langue de votre choix. Donc, avec l'augmentation des conflits et des urgences humanitaires causées par le changement climatique et le manque de ressources naturelles, les femmes et les filles sont touchées de manière disproportionnée. Que faites-vous en tant que dirigeant principal au ministère de la Défense pour protéger les femmes et les filles et comment devrions-nous préparer l'avenir dans un tel contexte?
Okay, I'll start and then hand over to my colleagues. I think that, competition for natural resources has always been the basis for conflict. As those natural resource deposits become more and more in demand and more limited, conflict will follow. Add to that the realities of climate change, the impact that has on availability and accessibility to those resources, and it becomes even more severe. Add to that the ever-growing population and on, right? You get the point. So as we see increases in natural and man-made disasters and the impact that that has on human populations, the first order effect is competition for survival. And when governments fail to be able to provide some form of order, the competition becomes unregulated. And when those controls are removed, power shifts to the dominant group, which in most societies are led by the patriarchal hierarchy, right? The colloquial alpha male. And these hierarchies in societies often enable men and boys to gain greater access to education, employment, life-saving skills, and other resources. And the lower provision of status and power to women and girls in societies then multiplies their risk in times of crisis and unrest. And due to the impact of unequal gender roles and norms in society, therefore, women and girls are often pushed into situations of extreme vulnerability. Alors, faut qu'on comprenne les dynamiques de pouvoir qui sont en jeu. And the second and third order effects, such as the disproportionate impact on women and girls, is important for the defense team as we both plan and execute operations in these environments. Preparing defense team members for this falls in part to the training and education they receive. And one such example is the training that the Canadian Armed Forces has conducted in Gender-Based Analysis Plus. L'équipe de défense, pour comprendre tous les outils qui sont appropriés et disponibles pour faire l'analyse quand on essaie de traiter comment on répond aux conflits, aux opérations de paix et les désastres humanitaires. GBA Plus is one way to ensure that the needs of the world's most vulnerable groups are identified and targeted in planning and conducting operations. In order to be at our best, we must understand the root causes of connected vulnerabilities, such as gender and racial inequalities, and then work to address them. We have proven that the application of GBA Plus may have been very successful in mitigating the effect of climate disaster in our own backyard.
Super, merci. I totally agree with the vulnerable groups. And we're already seeing that with the migration movements related to les changements climatiques. Donc, est-ce qu'il y a quelqu'un d'autre qui a d'autres choses à ajouter?
Oui, je veux rajouter. So, since 2016, as a direct result of the Chief of Defense Staff Directive for the integration of UNSCR 1325, we have been successfully applying GBA Plus to all planning, policies, and operations. We also have developed and implemented the gender perspective in operation, where in each phase, so the preparation, the planning, and the execution, we look at the environment to better understand the human security situation. In doing so, we are able to assess the different risks across the population, and we're in a better position to target emergency response to these groups with the highest urgency, those that are most vulnerable. L'efficacité accrue des forces armées canadiennes lors de l'opération Lantus depuis 2016 illustre les avantages de l'analyse et la gestion des crises en appliquant une perspective de genre. Par exemple, grâce à une application de l'analyse comparative du sexe plus lors des inondations de 2017 dans la région de Gatineau au Québec, les membres des Forces armées canadiennes ont pu identifier et fournir une aide vitale à des groupes touchés de manière disproportionnée en fonction des facteurs croisés tels comme l'âge, le sexe, le revenu et l'éducation. So, la performance des Forces armées canadiennes en support de la population a été accrue grâce à cet outil. Another key aspect that we have to start thinking about is prevention. One of the key pillars of the Women, Peace, Security is the prevention of violence and conflict. And applying a gender perspective in advance, working towards gender equality, and using our roles toward the empowerment of women are some ways to mitigate the extreme impact of future crisis for women and girls. We need to get better at leveling the playing field and to lessen the risk and the vulnerabilities in conflict, peace operations, and humanitarian disaster. De plus, je crois que les Forces armées canadiennes doivent travailler en étroite collaboration avec la société civile et les organisations non gouvernementales. En effet, un des effets les plus bénéfiques de la résolution 1325 du Conseil de sécurité a été la résurgence de la société civile et l'apparition de nouvelles organisations non gouvernementales investies spécifiquement dans le soutien aux femmes, filles et garçons. Donc, les Forces armées canadiennes doivent continuer de travailler en étroite collaboration avec ces nouvelles organisations pour, un, mieux comprendre la situation au sol et, de deux, être en mesure d'aider les personnes vulnérables.
Oui, Lise, je suis totalement d'accord. Puis, c'est raisonnable de penser que ce genre d'opération va arriver plus souvent aussi avec les changements climatiques qui vont, en tout cas, les effets du changement climatique qui vont se produire dans le futur. Merci. Je vais passer la parole à Anna pour la troisième question.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Okay, so our third question is a bit more talking about firsthand experience that the three of you might have experienced when you were on operation. So the question is, please share with me an experience where you saw firsthand how having more women included in the peacemaking or decision-making processes improved the operation or policy or program.
You know, I think that it's more than having women around the table. This is about the requirement for diversity and inclusion of everyone, women and men and binary, non-binary person, different minority, diverse cultures, languages and religion. I think in the end, it's about getting as many different perspectives as we can with different people around the table. Each of our background and our experience make us see the world slightly differently. Si j'avais un dollar pour chaque fois que j'ai entendu quelqu'un dire « Hey, j'avais pas vu ça de cette manière » ou bien « Bonne considération, je n'aurais pas considéré ça », je crois bien que je serais riche. À la fin, différentes personnes autour de la table amènent des perspectives différentes qui, à leur tour, apportent une compréhension beaucoup plus complète de la situation. Ensemble, nous sommes plus forts, plus agiles, complets et notre compréhension beaucoup plus approfondie des problèmes qui apportent des solutions beaucoup plus complexes, réfléchies et inclusives qui, à leur tour, ont des meilleures chances de succès. So it's all about doing things better, putting every chance of success on our side.
I think that's a really great way to phrase it. And especially, I was actually in a webinar last week with NATO, and they actually said a great point. Someone asked, what is the value that women bring to operations? And the individual responded, yes, you can ask that question, but as long as you're also asking, what's the value that men bring to operations? Because it's not just... Not just what you're bringing to the table, but also just what are the differences that we bring, but also what are the similarities and why is there this dichotomy between men, women, and non-binary folks of bringing different things to the table instead of complementing things, like you said, bringing our best and ensuring the best opportunities for everyone.
I find it interesting that they asked that as a follow-up question or asked for that to be a follow-up question because, you know, the topic as we look at women in peace and security and the role that they fulfill ought not to be contrasted against the opposite, right? I mean, is it any different than the contemporary conversation on racism? If we're going to talk about any particular segment of society and the value that they bring, do we have to provide the counterargument that, you know, that white males bring equal value as white women or women of different ethnic? I just find that surprising in 2020 that we're actually going that direction. I think that, so I'll go back to my comment earlier, diversity brings strength. And I've seen in operations in both Afghanistan and Iraq where women on the ground conducting tactical operations have been more successful than a male counterpart would have been because of what they bring to that particular operation. And it's the ability to connect in with demographics that men may not have been able to. I think of Afghanistan in particular, where because of the Islamic fabric that overlays a good chunk of Afghanistan, that male soldiers trying to access sources of intelligence do not have ready access to women because of the cultural realities that we face there. And so women bring force multiplication effect to the tactical fight as much as they do to the planning and strategizing at the operational and strategic level. When I was in Iraq, the Combined Joint Task Force for Operation Inherent Resolve had a gender advisor, an Australian lieutenant colonel, who forced planners to think and look at their plans through a different lens, which speaks directly to Brigadier General Burgoyne's point. The strength of, wow, I didn't see it that way, or I never thought about it that way, when forced to consider their planning effort or the problem they're trying to solve through a different lens becomes a powerful tool that if you had a whole bunch of like-minded people from the same demographic around the table, you would never have gotten to unless you were forced to. And while there's lots of problem-solving processes that actually pull you into those spaces, I don't think that they're used readily in military planning. And so having a diverse perspective in operational plans groups at the table when we're looking at decisions that have an impact in an area of operations, and then finally all the way down to the tactical execution of those plans, having gender diversity, having diversity of all types, but gender diversity in particular, is incredibly important. And I think the Canadian Armed Forces and the broader defense team understands that. And I think that there's been all sorts of positive indications as to how we go about that. And I think it's driven by an internal understanding that this is important for our own organization as a profession, not as a result of external pressures.
Yeah, that completely makes sense. I just have one follow-up question. Particularly, I'd like to kind of paint a picture of the change that D&D CAF has gone through over, let's say, the past 20 years. Have any of you noticed a difference since when you first joined the armed forces to now in respect to how operations are conducted in terms of inclusion of women or diversity and inclusion?
Hannah, I think that, without a doubt, that the Canadian Armed Forces has evolved in the last 20 years. That goes without saying. From the way that we conduct operations, I think that we still remain operationally focused, and that is the main goal. Because we can participate and we are involved in every occupation, our role exists, whether we're at home or deployed. So I think that, you know, from that respect, we've really, the focus is on mission success.
And, you know, from my perspective, well, the bigger the pool of women that we have available, trained, qualified to deploy, the more we are going to be able to deploy women on operations. So at this point, we're about 16% women in the forces. And on any given days, there's about between 10 and 13% women that are actually deployed on operations. So we can do better. We can do better because I truly believe that there are still a few barriers out there. But in the next few months, we're going to be going through an analysis, like a barrier analysis. So dans les prochains mois, à travers de l'initiative LC, les Forces armées canadiennes effectueront un sondage sur la présence d'obstacles universels et contextuels à la pleine intégration des femmes dans les Forces armées canadiennes et à leur accès à la possibilité de déploiement dans les opérations des Nations unies. On va faire une enquête en ligne, des entrevues, des données concernant la représentation et la disponibilité des femmes et des hommes seront effectuées et l'enquête comprendra une série de questions reflétant environ les 10 obstacles majeurs qui ont été identifiés. On regarde à environ 1800 membres des Forces armées canadiennes qui seront inclus dans l'échantillon. Et puis le rapport final est attendu pour septembre 2021. So même si l'intégration des femmes à l'intérieur des Forces armées canadiennes se déroule très bien, il y a toujours de la place pour de l'amélioration. Et puis, cette analyse des barrières nous donnera des bonnes indications des changements à faire pour vraiment augmenter le nombre de femmes à l'intérieur des Forces armées canadiennes et puis les femmes pour se déployer dans des opérations.
And with that said, and I agree fully that there's a lot more we can do. Quand on regarde la politique de la force canadienne, et spécifiquement quand ça parle de parmi nos alliés, les forces armées canadiennes est vue comme un leader parmi, dans l'intégration de genre militaire. En fait, dans les forces armées canadiennes, la dernière occupation a été fermée aux femmes, celui de sous-marinier, a été ouvert en 2001. And today, notwithstanding the statistical comment that General Bourgon raised, women participate fully and meaningfully in all aspects of domestic and international missions. The Canadian Armed Forces has developed and implemented policies of equal opportunity for years and is making considerable effort to attract greater numbers of qualified women and to identify and address potential barriers to members of defense. And there's many clear examples of where women leading within the Canadian Armed Forces are setting the bar for other nations to attempt to follow. And I think Major General Carignan, leading the NATO training mission in Iraq, is a great example. Lise Bourgon, sitting to my left, led the Canadian Armed Forces mission in the Middle East. Commodore José Kurtz was one of the first to command a Canadian warship, and then last year was the first to command a standing NATO maritime task group. Plus récemment, le lieutenant-colonel Jean-Pierre Bertrand a pris commandement d'un bataillon infanterie léger dans la 5e Brigade. And it has to be emphasized that these accomplishments are based on merit, not tokenism. But the list is long, and the accomplishments of these leaders could not have been realized without leaders of the past setting the conditions for them to follow. And I'll ask Chief Warrant Officer Harris to chime in here in a moment with some other examples. But there's no question that challenges remain to fully realize gender equality. The Canadian Armed Forces undertakes daily efforts to address those. As an example, as I mentioned, we're working to update Duty with Honor to be more inclusive and reflect the values of today. And then the Canadian Armed Forces Diversity Strategy is made important additions to the code of conduct to improve the inclusion and experiences of diverse personnel. These updates aim to ensure that the doctrine and policy continuously uphold the dignity and value of all persons, and that they advance women's representations and enable their inclusion as equal partners in all roles at all levels.
Général Bourgogne, j'ai une dernière question pour vous. Vous avez parlé d'un sondage, d'une enquête qui va être menée par rapport au déploiement pour l'émission, mais j'aimerais savoir si c'est quelque chose qui pourrait aussi s'appliquer au recrutement au niveau du public. Est-ce que c'est quelque chose qu'on fait en ce moment ou c'est quelque chose qu'on pourrait envisager?
Non, on est engagé avec des sondages en ce moment du côté de recrutement. Comment attirer une plus grande diversification dans les Forces armées canadiennes du côté des minorités visibles et aussi du côté des femmes? À chaque année, on pose les questions comment qu'on peut améliorer notre processus de recrutement, comment qu'on peut attirer plus de groupes autres que, je vais le dire, là, les hommes blancs un peu, là, comment la diversification peut s'améliorer. Et puis, la même chose du côté de la rétention, c'est une chose d'avoir des femmes et des groupes visibles à l'intérieur des Forces canadiennes, mais il faut aussi les garder. Et donc, il faut comprendre pourquoi ces gens quittent les Forces armées canadiennes pour essayer de leur donner un peu une meilleure qualité de vie puis les garder avec nous. Parce que le plus longtemps qu'on peut les avoir, c'est vraiment la force de la diversité.
And okay, I think merci. We need to go beyond simple attraction to the recruiting process because what I would be interested in is how do we maximize the success rate of those women that we both attract and then recruit? In order to get them into the Canadian Armed Forces past their operational function point. And so are there barriers, systemic, visible or invisible barriers to success within our professional development system in that first developmental period that we need to look at to make sure that the playing field is level. And so as we look at fitness standards and performance standards across the spectrum of that recruit period, from when they join to when they come up the end of the pipe as qualified soldiers, do we have that right? And then the other kind of irony is, as we look at retention initiatives to keep women in the uniform, many of the driving factors that lead to women releasing from the Canadian Armed Forces are the same factors that lead to men releasing from the Canadian Armed Forces. And so we should have an interest in retention efforts for women, because it will lead to a broader retention outcome for the broader population. And so that's a kind of an ironic spin-off of focusing in on a particular demographic that has a broader impact to the broader population.
Merci, c'est super. Puis aussi, je me demande s'il n'y a pas un lien aussi avec des idées préconçues que les femmes ou certaines minorités ont des forces justement qu'il faudrait peut-être changer. Là-dessus, je vais passer la parole à Anna pour la dernière partie. Merci.
All right, so we'll move on to question four. We're going to ask this one in English and French just because this one is a fun one and I want to ensure that even our listeners hear it right off the bat of what we're asking. So question four, including women in decision-making in both conflict and peacekeeping strengthens rebuilding and community connectedness. How is the defense team ensuring women's voices are heard and women themselves are represented both domestically and internationally? And I know we already kind of touched upon this in our previous question, but maybe we can just talk a little bit more directed to this question. And then Nadia is going to ask it in French real quick before we begin.
OK, donc, je prends la relève. Si vous pouviez mettre en œuvre une chose, une politique ou un programme au sein de l'équipe de la défense, qu'est-ce que ce serait? Est-ce que ce serait un programme sur les femmes, la paix et la sécurité, et elle serait-elle et pourquoi?
So, Hannah, to ensure women's voices are being heard and that we're being represented both domestically and internationally, we've done a lot. And we've already mentioned that women are employed now in every occupation within the Canadian Forces. So I guess that would be step number one. But with that said, we are making significant strides in addressing the barriers that women face and men as well, by hearing and listening to what they have to say. And in particular, our advisory groups, our defense team advisory groups, and since this is Women, Peace and Security, we'll focus on the Women's Advisory Group and is more affectionately known as the DWAO. And anyway, what this is, it's a space for women to voice their concerns and to raise topics that need to be addressed. And because of its ability to be heard, there's often greater leverage in amending somewhat dated policies, and it gets things moving and they evolve quite quickly, actually. And as an example of the success of the DWAO, the grooming standards, which we've all come to affectionately know as the beard and ponytail policies in the last couple of years, but though it's issues like that that are brought to the forefront by the advisory organizations. And recently they're dealing with further modernizing hair policies and uniforms, the accessibility of maternity uniforms and women's health and wellness, just to name a few. And the weight of these advisory organizations is quite significant. They have a great depth and reach, and it shouldn't be underestimated for people that aren't necessarily familiar with them. You know, they've resulted in a women's service dress subcommittee that reports to the National Dress Committee, which gives women a voice in our uniforms, which we didn't necessarily have in previous years. And also there's an advisor that is specifically reports on the health and wellness initiatives to the Canadian Armed Forces Surgeon General. So we do have a voice out there. And for those listeners, if you're not aware, I'll put a little plug out there right now. There is a gender-focused mentorship group, and it is targeted for women and those that identify as women. And it is just a space to simply be paired up with a person that may share similar experiences with you, and you can access that through the Defence Women's Organization, Women's Advisory Organization. But all of these examples are they've proven successful, and they've resulted in driven and empowered women over the last couple of years. And the most recent, I guess, area that they have impacted is the changes to the naming of the Navy ranks. And which the commander of the Navy involved the entire Canadian Forces, really, in solicited advice and recommendations. And you know, it's just another way for everyone to be heard as we evolve.
And I think so. Tools like social media have really helped. So I've been a member of the DWAO Facebook page for 7 years, I think, well before I became the champion. And it was because as a commander, I was genuinely interested in the issues that they were talking about, because it does, in some cases, affect operational effectiveness in terms of, you know, the effectiveness of military equipment and how that applies to our ability to do our job, et cetera. But more broadly, it affects the culture and the morale of a significant demographic group within the Canadian Armed Forces. You know, there's no question that there are challenges and barriers that exist for women and other marginalized groups. And while there have been efforts to increase representation and diversity within the Canadian Armed Forces, the fact is that we remain an institution that's dominated by white males. And as a white male, I am genuinely interested in understanding the other perspectives in order to help address some of the internal changes that we need to address. As we go forward from here, how we use, and Chief Minister Harris commented on it, so the defense advisory groups are becoming a more and more vocal source to inform and policy and policy development, to the point where they used to be kind of knocking at the door to try to provide their point of view. Now their point of view is being solicited by the chain of command and by the policymakers. And to me, that's a significant step forward. Are we there where we need to be yet? No. But I think that as we look at how we formulate policy, it is now an active part of our thought process to make sure that the representation that we're looking for exists. And that exists from, you know, the military colleges and some of their internal committees, all the way up through to some of the Canadian Armed Forces level committees like Chief Warrant Officer Harris referred to.
Well, you know, if I had a magical wand, if there's one thing that I could change, I think it would be the perception that 1325 is all about women, and therefore it's a women's problem. So, s'il y a une chose que je pouvais faire, c'est vraiment changer la perception que la résolution 1325 concerne les femmes, et donc c'est un problème de femmes. 1325 for me is about so much more than gender or women. It looks at men, girls, and boys. And through our Canadian perspective of the plus in the GBA, it looks at so many more factors such as age, religion, languages, and the list is long. It's honestly the full human security gamut. So 1325 and applying a gender perspective in operation is not the sole responsibility of the women on the team or the gender advisor assigned to the operation. It's everyone's responsibility. The way I see it, it's a new way of looking at the world. It's like putting a pair of glasses and seeing the world through new lenses. Lenses that are not pink, okay? Those lenses are not pink, but they're multicolored as it looks at the entire human security environment and how different people are affected differently. So honestly, I would beg all the men to get involved because we need them. Donc, l'intégration de la perspective des genres dans les opérations n'est pas un rôle ou une responsabilité seulement pour les femmes. C'est un travail d'équipe et chacun doit faire sa part, les hommes inclus.
I completely agree. It's definitely a starting point of conversation within the equity sphere right now. Is definitely, it's not just a fight for whatever group is asking for equal or equitable rights. It's not just their problem. It should be everyone's task. And it can't be done without the equal efforts of everyone involved. And I would say sometimes even more efforts for those who currently hold the positions of power, for those who are in the position that has been previously been the like in the position of power. And I think that that's just a really great point that we need to really call in our allies at this time and really ensure that UNSCR 1325 moves forward for the next 20, 30 years alongside a, for lack of a better term, army of allies that are working towards common goals and really ensuring that inclusivity of women and non-binary folks, the burden isn't placed on their back.
Yeah, I would say two things and echoing both your comments and General Borgonos, and that is that this is a leadership issue, and it's a leadership issue in two respects. One is within the Canadian Armed Forces and the broader defense team, this is an issue for all leaders, arguably all people at all levels, all ranks, backgrounds. They need to understand that what it is that we're really talking about here, right? This isn't about political correctness. This isn't about disadvantaging a group or advantaging a group relative to other groups. This is about making sure that that we have an open, inclusive, and welcoming organization that allows for us to execute the operations that we're being asked to do. And we can't do that if we have a narrow view of the world. It's a leadership issue in the sense that we, for years, have been setting the example for our allies to follow. I could tell you some of the conversations. I've spent a lot of time in the United States, a lot of time on international missions working with allies, and some nations simply don't share our perspective on the value of that diversity, and nor do they share a perspective on the value that women bring to some roles. And, you know, so Canada in this sense is absolutely leading. And I think UNSCR 1325, the defense advisory groups, the champions that have been named and empowered to drive this conversation on behalf of the organization, all bring together that same effort. So tomorrow, for example, there's going to be a education consortium on women, peace, and security that's going to talk about how we integrate this into professional military education. And CDA, the Canadian Defense Academy, is leading that effort within the broader Canadian community. And it's a bi-national, largely, forum. And we will be sharing our perspectives with one of our key allies on how it is that we do that to help bring them along in some respects. Because at the end of the day, all of this diversity brings strength and operational effectiveness for us to be able to achieve ultimately our nation's security goals whether those are domestic or international.
I completely agree. And I am glad, just in general, to have the three of you on this call, in the sense that this really exemplifies the type of leadership that is at National Defense and the Canadian Armed Forces, and the kind of leaders that are really making great strides for gender equality, diversity, and inclusion at National Defense and the Canadian Armed Forces. So that's just a little shout out to the three of you as well, because your work does not go unnoticed as leaders within the CAF and D&D. And so in saying that, I will move on to our fifth question. And it is, if you could implement one thing within the defense team, be it a policy, program, service, etc., right now with the snap of your fingers, that would support women, peace and security agenda, what would it be and why?
I'll start, and because my dream is simple. It is for people to treat all people with dignity and respect, irrespective of what sort of sub-demographic they come from. Regrettably, there's no policy or training that will change that. Because at the end of the day, we reflect society, and not all of society understands that. But if I could change one thing, it would be for all members of the defense team to treat all people with dignity and respect.
I think that's a great dream to move forward. And honestly, if we could just convince some even more senior leaders at defense to make a policy about dreams, that would be great. I don't think it would happen, but we could cross our fingers.
For me, Hannah, honestly, if given the opportunity to change one thing at the snap of my fingers, I would change the way that we build teams. We're transitioning from a place of where, you know, the fastest runner, the loudest person on the parade square, they were the best and the of what we had to offer in terms of leadership. But now we're in a place, and the world is changing, and we need leaders that from the outset, that, you know, not only are physically fit and, you know, are great representatives of, you know, the dress, drill, and deportment and everything that the military what we represent, but ones that I don't know how to measure this, but moral courage and inclusive mindsets is really what are their two key components that, well, we have them as part of our teams now. We don't necessarily measure it and set that to the forefront. So if we could change that, that would be my goal.
Yeah, I think speaking to the moral courage part, I think that's a big thing in our society today. And I'm hoping to see it as we move along and get more young folks engaged in the Canadian Armed Forces and National Defense. Is I will say that young people today do have quite the gift of having a voice that they're not afraid to speak and stand up for what is right. And I feel like that can only, I feel like it spreads like wildfire, I guess is the best way to say it. When someone is confident enough to speak up in the face of oppression or any kind of injustice, then that can only be modeled as a leader, you know, whether it be someone who's just an officer, someone who goes up higher in the ranks, or someone who just works at D&D as a civilian. I think any kind of leader that really uses that moral courage that you speak of is really the kind of leader that I'm glad that the CAF and D&D really respects and encourages.
And I believe I've already answered this question, but I have a follow-on that I will add. So for me, it's really trying to convince people that GBA and gender in operation is not rocket science. So we need to do a better job at demystifying the process so that people they stick with it from the beginning. Like, we have a great process that is now mandatory for GBA Plus to be done on every policy, procurement, everything. But more often than not, it's at the end of the process when someone's, you know, wakes up and says, oops, I forgot the GBA analysis piece on it. And then once the project is almost 90% complete, they try to add the GBA plus. Well, it just doesn't work like that. So really need to demystify the process and looking at it through from the get-go at the beginning of the process, so that the GBA, the strength of the GBA is reflected throughout and not only as an add-on at the end. So that would be my piece, is the demystifying and the fact that it's just not rocket science.
Juste pour enchérir, Général Bourgon, je pense aussi que le JBA Plus est mal compris au niveau du public, du grand public, puis des gens qui savent pas vraiment c'est quoi, puis qui pensent justement que c'est juste un problème de femmes. Je pense qu'il faut passer le bon message aussi à l'extérieur de l'institution.
Oui, et je pense que c'est vraiment un point super important qu'il faut continuer à établir. Puis la formation, l'entraînement, puis avoir à chaque niveau d'entraînement, avoir une petite portion sur le GBA Plus, puis c'est quoi que ça veut dire, puis c'est quoi que ça demande. Et puis, est-ce qu'on va dans les rangs, est-ce qu'on progresse? Bien là, on a toujours un petit rappel, mais le rappel est de plus en plus élaboré pour que les gens puissent grandir dans le processus.
Oui, exactement. Merci.
All of my favorite podcasts finish off with what's called a popcorn style round table. So what I like to do is just like popcorn does, is pop from person to person. And if there's any last points that you want to add on that for some reason it wasn't covered with a question or it came up after you finished answering and you were like, ugh, I wish I said that, this would be the time to say it. So I will start off with Chief Warrant Officer Harris, and then you guys can just take it away on your end for whoever wants to add some things on, and then we'll just wrap it up.
Well, I guess, Hannah, my popcorn point is to stress the importance that of allies, whether it's women as an ally for men, or men as an ally for women, or an ally from an Indigenous perspective, or from the LGBTQ, you know, members. I think that allyship is critical, and that is not necessarily limited to leadership. That starts at the very bottom, and we're all members of a team, and that's really where we need to be. We need to be good teammates, respectful teammates, and we need to have one another's back, which is what we always talk about. But now we need to make that having one another's team back from a respectful, diverse lens.
Great. I'll echo the point that the general said was diversity is strength. And the more diverse we can be, the more operationally focused and better we'll be representing our national interests. So that's the objective.
I think the what
and
I would
the Kool-Aid ask, one is really good too. We drank the Kool-Aid and we believe in it.
Love that Kool-Aid. Between the Kool-Aid and popcorn, this is quite the podcast we've got going on.
I was just going to say Kool-Aid and popcorn go well together. I think what I would add is, so up until this past summer, I spent 3 years away from home. And one of the things you learn when you're outside of Canada, as you look through life in your new environment through a Canadian lens, is how we are different. And in many ways, as I alluded to earlier, you know, we're setting the bar pretty high. I listed a bunch of general officers and senior officers who have been successful, women who have been successful in their own right in non-traditional trades, or trades that weren't traditional 20 years ago, and trades that are not traditional outside of Canada. When I look at, so the last 2 years I spent on exchange with the U.S. Army. And I was reading an article the other day where they were talking about a female soldier, infantryman soldier, who had just joined her battalion. And this is really cutting edge stuff for the U.S. Army. In my regiment, the Royal Canadian Regiment, we have a master warrant officer. So company sergeant major level female soldier who is a supremely high quality soldier. I worked directly with her when I was at our infantry school. And she was one of the best instructors that we had there, full stop. And it's because of what she brings to the fight, right? She was significantly more empathetic than some of her male colleagues. She had a broader view of the world, and she just brought different tools into work every day that made her, relatively speaking, a more effective leader within that organization. And this is all by design, right? This goes back decades. And I think the big difference in our experience, the Canadian experience, is that we're thinking intentionally about how we do this, or have been for, you know, 20, 25, 30 years. And And so the implementation, the influence of things like UNSCR 1325 and the WPS agenda, we wouldn't be here where we are in 2020 without some leadership, you know, whether it was externally driven or internally driven, but at the end of the day, that was embraced by the leadership at some point in the past, that it is now fully, I think, embraced by the leadership today. And so when I look at our allies who are just at the front end of that experience and some of the challenges that they're going through, that we look at and go, that's so passe, you know, that's so 80s. To me, that's something that we should be both proud of and then share, right? It goes back to that leadership role with our allies. I think we can help them understand the pitfalls and the advantages of the diversity agenda that comes with gender integration in particular.
I think you're so right. And honestly, that was like a great note to end off this podcast with, was just the fact that I think, honestly, all three of your responses really touched on the fact that collaboration and allyship and best practice sharing is really the key moving forward with UNSCR 1325 in the next 10, 20, 30 years, is really knowing that we don't have all the answers as individuals and as an organization. And to get those answers, the best thing to do is to talk about it and to continue discussions such as this one moving forward. And I'm just so grateful that I had the time to speak with you today.
Well, I think I'll certainly speak for myself and say it's been my pleasure, both Hannah and Nadia. Thank you for your time and facilitating this conversation.
Merci à vous.
And good luck putting it together.
Thank you very much.
Good luck stitching it together.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
Digital podcasts are always different than in-person ones, for sure.
Thanks for listening. A reminder that this is only part one of three of a series of podcasts hosted by the Department of National Defense on UNSCR 1325. Stay tuned for the following two podcasts coming out later this week.